And welcome in to another edition of the B Squared Podcast. We are glad to be with you. He is Brian Beto. I'm Jordan Bernfield. And Brian, the Chicago Cubs, for the second consecutive year, are in the National League Championship Series.
To get there, what was that, Tuesday night, was just, it was just unbelievable. And an inning that we're going to remember for a long period of time. And then I think you get so caught up in the moment and the adrenaline and how exciting that specific game was. And it takes a couple days to realize that, oh my gosh, we're still playing. You know, like, now we're in the NLCS. Like, we're in the baseball's Final Four for the second consecutive year for the first time ever. They've been in the NLCS for back-to-back seasons, and it obviously hasn't gone their way. The previous few times they've been there, going all the way back to 84, but I don't recall, and, you know, maybe it's because I was, like, negative 3 months old when the Cubs were in 84, but when they've been a significant favorite like they have been going into this year, yeah, I know they had home field advantage in 2003, and they played the first, had a 2-0 lead against San Diego in 84, but they were clear underdogs in 89. They were, you know, could have gone either way last year. They started the NLCS on the road, but the Cubs are the team to beat in baseball's Final Four, and they're riding high after just an unbelievable night in San Francisco on Tuesday night.
It was incredible, and by the way, we should mention on this podcast, we have a third member of the team today. Your daughter, yeah. Grace Beto, has decided to grace us with her presence. And
not a dying calf in the background, I promise. It's just the wife's working. I have the baby this morning. She decided just now to start making noises, and she wants to become a broadcaster, apparently, and she's making some noises in there. So she's got some points to make, probably some pretty good ones, probably better than her dad, but at the end of the day, we'll do our best to keep her interruptions to a minimum.
Well,
here,
I want to know, did Grace want the Nationals or the Dodgers?
I think Grace, like her dad, wanted the Nationals, to be honest. She wanted Scherzer in game three, didn't have to worry about Kershaw in the first two games of this series, wasn't really threatened by the Nationals bottom of the order or their lack of rotation depth as much as she was the Dodgers and some of the left-handed hitting and pitching they have along. So I think that was her logic behind it, and it seemed to mirror mine as well.
Is Grace a Dusty fan, or is she anti-Dusty?
You know, Grace does have the Dusty band that Dusty threw me in 03.
Wow.
Against the Yankees in her room. So, I mean, she's got a little bit of soft spot for Dusty, but if we're ranking number 12s, off the top of our heads in Cubs history, Dusty's not number one. You probably go my guy, Sean Dunston, one. Well, I mean, I guess I got to say Schwarber now because he's
currently.
So we got Schwarbs, we got Dunston, we got Alfonso Soriano, probably number three on the list. Maybe a Leo Gomez from number four, if you remember Leo Gomez, and then Dusty maybe running out the top five.
That's awesome. All right, well, if he's fifth, I think Grace has a very fair opinion of that. So before we get to the NLCS and we break down the Dodgers series, let's talk again about game four on Tuesday night. So first of all, for game three, that was a game where I just felt like Jake Arrieta pitched well enough to win, but even though he did, it was a 3-2 game when he left, and I never felt like the lead was that safe in Game 3. It seemed like the Giants were starting to get back to what they do offensively in that game, which is to swing and to foul a lot of pitches off and to drive up pitch counts, because I thought Jake pitched really well. My biggest concern for him going into the start was that when the Giants are at their best, even though they're not a great offensive team, they can wear you down. And I thought Jake, despite that, did a really good job in game three. But I felt that as it was going along, this was like, it was made to be tied. It was made to be a game that might go late. I didn't expect Aroldis Chapman to struggle the way he did, but I think you just have to give credit to left-handed hitters who got the job done against a pitcher who almost never gives up hard contact to left-handed batters. I ended up staying up for that whole thing because I'm insane. I slept for 90 minutes between Monday and Tuesday because my hours are awesome. And then I got to game four exhausted but hoping that the Cubs could put it away. And honestly, as that game went along, Matt Mora gives up 2 hits. He strikes out 10 for 8 innings. I'm thinking to myself, well, listen, Lester in game 5 is a good thing because he's great, but Johnny Cueto was so good against us. And then I'm thinking, oh my God, could this team really blow it? And then because the rationality goes out the window the longer the thing goes.
100%.
So the first 5 or 6 innings, I'm thinking, we're fine. Lester's fine. We'll be okay in game 5. And then by the 8th inning, I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to have to deal with phone calls from my dad and my uncle about how they choked again and they suck and how they're never going to win and all this stuff. And then the 9th inning happens. And honestly, it was probably, I think last year when they beat the Cardinals in that game 4 in the first round, that was probably the most satisfying Cubs win of my entire life. But that game on Tuesday night is a close number 2. The way they came back, the way they rallied, the way they won that game to take the series was just unbelievable.
The whole night was unbelievable. And I made a point about game 3, and I agree. I think Jake pitched pretty well for the most part. I felt good when, obviously, when he hit that homer, and I'm like, oh my gosh, maybe this is it. This is the sweep that I had predicted in our last podcast. However, once they failed to tack on when they had the opportunity to really put the Giants away in that game, like you, I felt pretty uncomfortable for the remainder of that one. When Aroldis came in and gave up the 2-run double to Gillespie, I think, and maybe we can get to this a little bit later, but I feel like, okay, I think we're done with the experiment of trying him in those situations, bringing him in the middle of 8th innings, because I think this is the 3rd or 4th time they've tried it, and every single time it has not gone well. So that was an issue for me. It was cool to see Bryant tie it in the 9th, and then the marathon of staying up till 2 a.m, and I was exhausted all week. But then they come back, obviously, on Tuesday night, and it's a game for the ages. And I'm with you. It's a top three most gratifying moments for me, or gratifying games from a Cubs fan perspective, just to see what they were able to do and come back when it looked like they were pretty much done. I'd already started planning out what was going to happen in game 5, and are we going to see the same Cueto, and what if the Giants adjust to Lester, and when is Bumgarner going to come in for that one? And
right.
It was just scary. All the pressure was going to be on the Cubs against a Giants team who just flat out hadn't lost in elimination games. And the Cubs, somehow, this team gets mediocre starts from 3 out of their 4 guys, maybe 2 out of their 4 starters.
I would say that Arrieta was better than mediocre. I thought Jake was good. I really did.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So let's say,
I mean,
okay,
Lackey stunk, and Hendricks got
stunk.
Hurt.
Hendricks was okay.
Yeah.
So okay starts, but a little bit less than maybe what you'd expect against a not a fantastic lineup, a grindy lineup, but not a fantastic lineup. They didn't hit very well, the Cubs, pretty much the entire series outside of their pitchers, and then late in games in San Francisco. And yet they still won in 4 games. And that's what was, to me, kind of stands out if you look at it from a macro perspective. And they go into this series with a ton of momentum, the kind of sigh of relief that, hey, you know what, we took care of business against an inferior team, but an inferior team that's got a ton of recent history of winning. And that's where we stand heading into tonight. They lined up the rotation beautifully. They're able to take care of business on the road, and they got to feel good heading into tonight's game, game 1 against the Los Angeles Dodgers.
As you look ahead towards this NLCS, Beto, for me, I think the Dodgers are a good team. Obviously, you don't get here if you're not good. There's a lot of things to worry about if you're a Cub fan besides the Cubs. But I look at the circumstance by which the Dodgers have advanced here. And again, it's coming up Cubs in my mind, because the Dodgers used Clayton Kershaw 3 times in 5 games in the NLDS. I know he only threw 7 pitches on Thursday night, but that's not a typical side day. He had to warm up before the game.
Mm-hmm.
He warmed up during the game. He ends up throwing 7 pitches, much higher stress than he would in a typical bullpen session. Okay. Rich Hill started twice in the NLDS, and I know that he came out in the 2nd inning, but he still started twice. They used Kenley Jansen for 51 pitches on Thursday night, which was the most of his career. I mean, if you're going to get the Dodgers, you're getting them at the right time when their pitching staff is exhausted.
That is an advantage to the Cubs.
Most definitely. And you're right. The Cubs are in the driver's seat even before this thing started. Not necessarily saying that this is a guaranteed win, but they're in much better shape physically than the Los Angeles Dodgers, who have suffered a lot of injuries this year. And you mentioned the taxation on this starting pitching staff, and then Kenley Jansen at the back end of the bullpen, where they can't start Clayton Kershaw tonight. He's going to go tomorrow. And Rich Hill, who was great in Oakland, was good in minimal action as a member of the Dodgers, as he was dealing with a blister for the majority of the second half, wasn't very good at all, actually. He was bad. He stunk against the Nationals, but he threw a lot of pitches. And the Cubs are in much better shape to face the Dodger staff than vice versa. The Dodgers lineup does scare me and present some difficult issues that the Giants did not. They have a little bit more power. I feel like they have a little bit more balance up and down the lineup, and we can break that down, so on and so forth. But I will say this, going into the National League playoffs, once with including the Giants, including the Mets even, the Dodgers and the Nationals, the Dodgers are the team that I thought were the scariest for the Cubs to face out of all other four possibilities. And that's here we are. They were able to get a Game 5 win on the road, a series win where they could have won this a little bit sooner. I know they had to come from behind 2-1, but they left a ton of guys on bases, just didn't come through in the clutch until Game 5. And this is a team that can really get guys on base. They can knock them in, and they've just been able to somehow win despite all the injuries to the pitching staff they've had this year.
Yeah, they went 38-24 without Clayton Kershaw. They suffered the injury to Alex Wood. They suffered the Scott Kazmir injury. Andrew Friedman, their president, had to go out and make some creative moves to get Rich Hill onto this roster. Obviously, they signed Kenta Maeda before the season began, so they were expecting him to be in there. I mean, they had Ross Stripling coming off of Tommy John surgery and, you know, sort of middling results in 22 games and 14 starts. Julio Urias.
Bud Norris, who killed the Cubs with the Braves earlier this year.
Bud Norris was a Cub killer. I mean, they had 11 different guys start at least 5 games for them. I mean,
the dude
is,
from Normal, Brock Stewart, went to Illinois State.
Who also killed the Cubs. Remember that game?
He did.
Yes. So, I mean, this was a very piecemealed pitching staff for the Dodgers. It was one that Dave Roberts, their first-year manager, who I think might win Manager of the Year this year, he really did a very creative job of using his bullpen and all these different starters to kind of get through 9 innings on a day-in, day-out basis, because when Kershaw was down for 2.5 months, they didn't have any one guy in the rotation that you knew could lock down 7 or 8 innings in a start. So all those things being said, somehow they still won 91 games and went to the playoffs and now are here to face the Cubs in the NLCS. You mentioned them from an offensive standpoint. I mean, this is not a great Dodgers offensive team, but they have a bunch of good players, right? I mean, I would say that when you look at their power potential, they had 4 guys in the regular lineup that hit at least 25 home runs. When you look at Peterson, Turner, Seager, and who am I forgetting here? And Yasmani Grandal.
Adrian Gonzalez.
Adrian Gonzalez is 18-90, which is below what he normally does, but he's still professional at bats, gets on base, hits for a high average, very good hitter, all that sort of thing. So I think that this is clearly an upgrade. I mean, the Giants, we knew, were not a great offensive team, and we knew that you could beat their bullpen, which the Cubs did in miraculous fashion in Game 4. This is obviously a better baseball team than the Dodgers, as evidenced by the fact that they won the division. But I still think the Cubs are the better team on paper, one. And two, if the Cubs' bats start to hit a little bit more in this series, and granted, I know they're facing good pitching, but if the Cubs hit a little bit more, the way they've pitched, they can match any of these Dodger starters, and to me, they're the better team overall by a decent margin.
Yeah, I agree. They definitely are. And you look at some of the potential challenges, and of course, the Dodgers are going to be good on the mound and at the plate in the field, because they're one of the baseball's Final Four, so they're going to have some problems that They're going to cause some problems for the Cubs, I should say. And you mentioned some of those offensive players and some of the power that they had. They have a lot more power than the San Francisco Giants. This isn't the 27 Yankees, you know, Bronx Bombers. This isn't even the St. Louis Cardinals offensive powerhouse from this year as far as home runs are concerned. But they got some balance. Chase Utley, even at his age, has had a nice year at the top of the order. And we'll probably see Howie Kendrick in game one because he is a right-handed hitter. And you mentioned guys like Gonzalez. Corey Seager has just been unbelievable. He got off to a great start in the National Series. Justin Turner is – big-time baseball fans know who Justin Turner is. Other than that, he's probably the best player in baseball that nobody knows about. He's a guy that not only hits for power, but he works the counts. He's an anchor right in that three spot in the order. And he's got this sort of, to me, they're different players and they don't hit the same way. But the whole Daniel Murphy thing from a year ago, where if he has a monster year, people are going to be like, oh my gosh, Justin Turner, a 31-year-old, came out of nowhere. But the bottom line, and he's been very good this year. You mentioned a guy like Adrian Gonzalez, who didn't put up the averages that we're used to, but still a tough out at the plate. And Yasiel Puig, certainly a wild card because he's certainly capable of stirring things up offensively because he's got such a dynamic skill set. Josh Reddick's a guy that really grinds out at bats. Jock Peterson, who got off to a great start in 2015, had a pretty solid sophomore year, at least relative to his second half last year. So is another guy the Cubs staff's going to have to be worried about. But you have a lot of left-handed hitters on this Dodgers team. You have a lot of left-handed pitchers on this Dodgers team. So that will certainly go into the Cubs' game plan when they plan out how they're going to play this best-of-seven series. They've already started by knocking Tommy La Stella off the roster in favor of another left-handed reliever in Rob Zastrzyzny. So the Cubs already is trying to counter to make sure they have their best 25 men going against the other boys in blue.
I think when you look at tonight's game one, and we record this on Saturday at around lunchtime, game one will be about 7 hours from now as we record this podcast.
Watching a big Illinois-Rutgers matchup currently for everyone who cares.
I've got that on in the background. That is honestly like the worst football game of the weekend.
It's not good.
I mean, Rutgers showed pretty well last week, losing 78-0 to Michigan.
They played well. Yeah. They played well. Ruth Chris barely lost any money last week in Ann Arbor because of that.
Yeah. Oh, God. By the way, did you see that Harbaugh ate a steak with a glass of milk?
I'm sitting here right now with a glass of milk.
Yeah, but you're not eating a steak, I assume.
I'm lying. I'm not. Yeah, what makes you think I'm not eating a filet right now at 12:12?
I don't know. You're a fancy guy, Brian Beto. Maybe you are eating a steak for lunch.
I'm eating a nice little filet. I had it delivered from Joe's on Grand right now. And you know what?
Oh, they deliver to the burbs. That's nice.
Yeah, they deliver to the burbs. It's a new thing. Yeah. It's a new thing right in Glen Ellen here. And, you know, I'm enjoying a filet and I'm drinking a nice cold glass of skim milk because I'm trying to keep off the weight during October here. You know what I mean?
And so you're also wearing khakis and a blue Michigan shirt and a blue Michigan hat. Is that correct? I'm speaking with Jim
absolutely.
Harbaugh.
I'm standing up right now when I record this too.
So I look at tonight's game one, okay? John Lester against Kenta Maeda. To me, John Lester, we know, handles pressure well. He's a very good playoff pitcher. We know all that. But I think there's pressure on him to win tonight because this is a clear advantage for the Cubs. And when you have home field advantage and you have your ace on the mound against their third starter who was depreciably worse in the second half, you got to win. I mean, tonight to me, especially with Clayton Kershaw potentially pitching game two tomorrow night, I think tonight's a must win for the Cubs because you put yourself at a disadvantage going into a game two where you'd have to beat Kershaw, and then you find yourself down 2-0 going back to L.A. So tonight is a very critical game for the Cubs.
Yeah, I talked about this last night, actually, to a couple buddies, and I agree with you because I made the comparison that the Indians won last night in game one of the ALCS over Toronto, and that was an important game for Cleveland because you have Corey Kluber, and then there's a big drop-off after him because there's no Salazar and no Carrasco for Cleveland. The Toronto's got some great bats, and you're at home. So if you lose, then you go down 0-1, and you have guys that are significantly worse than a Kluber because Trevor Bauer is playing with drones and all these other things going on.
What is going on with that guy?
In that series. But it reminds me a little bit of what the Cubs have to face tonight because of the point you just made about It's a considerable advantage of John Lester going against Kenta Maeda. And Maeda is a nice pitcher. He's a nice, solid, middle-of-the-rotation type of starter who was better in the first half than he was in the second half. But the Cubs are at home. If they go down 0-1, it's the world's not going to end. We're not going to jump off ledges. I say that now. But it's still going to be very beneficial. A lot of pressure's on the Cubs to win tonight. And it'll be interesting to see what sort of lineup they go with, because Maeda, as you mentioned, has struggled in a little bit more in the second half. He's been much better against right-handed hitters, a lot, 150-point OPS better against right-handed hitters as opposed to left-handed hitters. So I know we can talk about how can you take Javi out of the lineup, and I get that, and I agree with that. There has to be some sort of discussion about potentially using Chris Coughlin to start this game against a guy that has struggled to get out lefties this year.
I think that's a really interesting point. I think that Coughlin could end up playing a decent role in this series. I thought it was interesting that Tommy La Stella was taken off the roster and that Miguel Montero stayed on it, because there was some worry about whether he'd be able to play with the back injury, and I know that they want him to catch Jake. That's really the reason he's on the roster in the first place, but you know, I think that's potentially interesting. You know, you could use Montero tonight is in a pinch hit role potentially, because you have three catchers available to you on the roster. I think that when you look at Maeda, this is a guy that in the second half had an ERA almost a run and a half worse than the first half. He did not pitch well last week when the Nationals beat the Dodgers 8-3, and I think it was game three of that series. So we're not talking about a guy that's coming out and throwing the ball extremely well right now. That being said, Joe Maddon made the point yesterday at the media day prior to the series that when you're facing a guy that you don't know, the advantage is always with the pitcher, because hitters have to adjust. I know that the Cubs have had scouts following the Dodgers for weeks, but it's one thing to tell Chris Bryant all the things that he needs to do when he goes up to the plate against Maeda. It's another thing for Chris Bryant to have experience seeing him and being able to then react to him as the game goes along. So in my view, that's where the Cubs have the biggest disadvantage, is that they didn't see Kershaw this year. They didn't see Maeda this year. So the starts in which both of those guys pitch will be the first time they've ever seen Maeda, and the first time they've seen Kershaw in at least a year. So that's a challenge. But I think that the Cubs offense got so little from guys that you'd expect to do something in the first series and still won. Chris Bryant was great. Javi Baez was obviously the star both offensively and defensively in the DS. But you have to think Anthony Rizzo is not going over 1-for-14 again, right? You have to think that Addison Russell is not going to be a complete liability in the five spot. You have to think that the Cubs are going to be able to get contributions from hitters that they weren't getting them from in the previous series. So I think that it's a matter of time for the Cubs' bats to come alive. And I also think the last inning they played of that series offensively in San Francisco was so significant, because it showed their offense that they can get it rolling again. And I think that maybe they pull some of that momentum from that game, and maybe it carries over a little bit when they face the Dodgers.
Yeah, most definitely. And you mentioned Anthony Rizzo, and this is a really good matchup for him in theory, a guy that struggles against lefties, and Rizzo, a guy that faced some tough left-handed pitching in the series against San Francisco. We know he didn't hit. He wasn't the typical Anthony Rizzo that we've been accustomed to. Was able to had a much better approach in game four against San Francisco, where he got a hit, and then he worked himself in the favorable count in the ninth inning, drew the walk. And so hopefully he can carry that over. Same goes with Ben Zobrist, who worked himself in a favorable count against Sergio Romo, was able to drive the ball into the corner. Even Jason Hayward might have a nice matchup tonight in game one of the series too. So guys that we hadn't seen a lot from last series, but we saw a ton from all year long, you can maybe expect them to get going. A guy like Rizzo and Zobrist makes a ton of sense to me. And the Dodgers, they don't walk a ton of guys per se, but the Giants pitching staff it was sort of notorious this year for making you put the bat on the ball, and the Cubs' strength does rely on grinding out at bats, going into favorable hitting counts. They might have the opportunity to get into some of those counts that they didn't always find themselves in during the DS. So I know tonight's just one game, and each pitcher on the Dodgers is a little bit different, but Rich Hill's a guy that has fallen behind in the playoffs so far. So the pitching-wise, this could end up being – or hitting-wise, I should say, for the Cubs, could end up being a little bit better of a matchup that plays to their strengths.
All right, so Cubs and Dodgers. Now, have you allowed yourself – Brian Beto, to think about if the Cubs win this series?
I have. I walked around Wrigleyville this morning with Gracie. My wife Sarah's working, and I usually kind of walk her around on those days anyway. And I was like, you know what? I'll just drive down to Wrigleyville and walk around the field a little bit. And I'm not kidding. I'm not making this up. I'm not fabricating it. There was already electricity around the ballpark at 9 a.m. this morning. There was people lining up trying to get tickets. There was other people doing the same thing I was doing, just walking around the ballpark. And even if not, there was a ton of people in Cubs apparel and wearing Cubs hats and jackets and all these things. And I know that's been happening a lot over the last couple of weeks, but you could already feel it because everyone's sort of ready to break out. And they got me thinking about, oh my gosh, they're just four wins away from potentially moving on to the Fall Classic, which is something they obviously have not done during our lifetimes or our father's lifetime. So it's something that you do think about. I'm not trying to put the cart before the horse here. But I've tried my best not to think about it too much and just focus on the games. Like, I act like I have a potential impact on the outcomes of these games by thinking ahead of it. But it's hard to not visualize them hoisting, you know, this National League pennant and walking off at Wrigley in game 6 or 7, knowing that they got at least 4 more games left to go.
I got an email from a good friend of mine who is trying to put together a group to go to Cleveland or Toronto for the World Series, and just to read the email with legitimate plans about the Cubs being in the World Series almost made like my brain just fall out of my skull onto my computer screen. But at the same time, last year when they got there, I felt like this is amazing that they're here, but I wasn't really that confident that they were going to win.
Right.
The National League.
They're playing with house money, as we've talked.
I mean, yes, I was like, this is amazing because they might go to the World Series. But I thought, you know, you got to beat DeGrom. You got to beat Harvey. You got to beat Syndergaard. You got to beat Mats. This team is pitching out of its, you know what? I don't know how we're going to beat these guys. This year, I'm not saying that the Dodgers aren't going to be very formidable or a good team or a challenging team or this series isn't going to have a lot of tense moments. I don't think I'm going to sleep for another week, 2 weeks. But the reality is, it's not like it's any different from my normal life, but that I digress. But the reality is that this Cubs team is better than the Dodgers. And it's better than the Indians. And I think it's better than Toronto, too. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they're going to win this series. I don't know how, but they're going to win this series. I just believe that that's going to happen. And I'm never the guy that is overly confident, and I don't feel like this is overconfidence. I just feel like objectively looking at the two teams, the Cubs should win this series. And it's feeling like this could finally be real. This could finally be it. And it's just, I mean, every moment now is so magnified, and I've already in my mind decided 100 ways why they will win and why they won't win. But I just feel like this team has everything they need to win 4 of the next 7 games.
They really do. They're fully equipped. And I'm with you. Last year was great. We've said it all season long that last year was almost like playing with house money because they arrived a year early, so to speak. And when we beat the Cardinals last year in the DS, it was just pure jubilation. It's like, oh my gosh, this team's really good, and we're making it to the NLCS. We're happy to be here. And not that I didn't think they had a chance, but there's just a different feel this year. Certainly, I was just pumped when they won the DS this year against San Francisco, and you can't take that for granted, especially in baseball when anything can happen in a small sample size. But it almost felt like a relief. I'd like, okay, you know what? We've played the entire 162 games. We played a best of five. We're at where we were a year ago. This time, though, we're better equipped to get to where we want to be. And that's how I feel going into tonight's game. Can the Dodgers beat the Cubs? Absolutely. There's a much better chance than people probably think about just because baseball it is so interesting and weird at times. But the Cubs on paper and in theory are the best team out of the final four remaining. Let's call a spade a spade. So if they're able to play the way that we've seen over this 162 game stretch, which isn't always the easiest thing to accomplish, but if they can, they will be advancing to the World Series for the first time in 71 years. So the Dodgers are a very good team. I've talked about how much value I felt in their 8-1 odds to win the World Series going into the playoffs, and I thought they would win against Washington, but I still think the Cubs definitely have the upper hand.
If the Cubs are, let's say they're winning the fourth win, okay, and it's the seventh inning and they're up by three or four runs, or, you know, it's comfortable enough that you feel like it's going to happen, okay, are you going to have a champagne celebration to celebrate this? I mean, how are you going to handle this? Because my uncle's family, when the Cubs won the division, they popped champagne and started spraying it on each other, which I thought was hilarious. And I feel like if the Cubs make or win the World Series, that I kind of want to do that, because I've always wanted to do that because it sounds really fun.
So I've done the champagne thing kind of as fun a couple of times. I actually did. I legit got a bottle of Andre. Really classy. I said I would pick up the level of class per milestone that they accomplished this year. So when, if you recall, it was a Thursday night. When
so if
the
they
Cubs
win the series, are you drinking Dom?
I have. So we have a bottle of Dom from our wedding that we have two.
We just got one as an engagement gift. I don't think Deanna would let me open it for the Cubs winning the World Series.
Yeah, maybe she does. You know what? If she doesn't listen to this podcast, is what you do. You pop the Dom. Maybe she's not around. You drink it. You pour it, whatever. Then you go to the liquor store, buy a bottle of Andre or Corbel, refill it into the Dom.
Oh, there you go. Now that's sneaky, but actually a brilliant idea.
It's a great idea. So I plan on doing some sort of champagne. I haven't poured on anything. I'm not kidding. When we clinched in 07, it was another one of those division. It was one of those scenarios where it wasn't a Cubs win that clinched it. It was somebody else losing.
Right.
Losing to the Reds, if I'm not mistaken.
They were in Cincinnati.
Or the San Diego.
They lost,
right?
But I think I forget who had to win.
The Brewers
it was a late
lost
game.
To
yes.
San Diego
right.
in Milwaukee, and then we doused each other in champagne, and then that the Cubs didn't win a game in the playoffs that year. But we did the whole champagne thing anyway, and if they have a clinching moment, I brought the Andre down in that Thursday night game this past, a few weeks ago, or a month ago, I guess it's been about now. I think a month ago to the day they clinched, if I'm not mistaken, I brought it down. The Cubs ended up losing the game, but then I stayed up to watch the Cardinals lose in San Francisco to drink some champagne. So I will have some sort of bubbly at hand if there is a scenario where the Cubs have a chance to clinch the final game and head to the World Series.
I mean, I think that if they win the World Series, I don't even know how that celebration will happen, if I will live.
Discussion for another time, right? We got time to think about it.
Right, but if they win the pennant and they're going to the World Series, there will be champagne consumed by me at some point.
There'll be a lot more than just champagne consumed by me, I'll tell you that much.
Oh,
just
I'm going to be doing... I'm going to be doing handstands, I think.
Ugh.
I mean, it's... I can't honestly, it's just, it's crazy to think that 2 years in a row they've been in the Final Four, but this time it just feels like they're going to do it this time. So yeah, we'll see. Maybe that's me being a Cubs fan. Certainly the Dodgers could win, but I just feel like it's going to happen this time. All right. Your pick for the series, Brian Beto, Cubs in four?
Okay. No, I'm not going with Cubs in four. I did go for the sweep. We combined our predictions. Did you have Cubs in five last time?
I did, yes.
I can't even imagine if that series would have gone five. So
no,
thank God.
I would have had a heart attack. So
yeah,
we wouldn't have
sure.
been doing this podcast because I'd be dead.
for sure. So I had the Cubs in a sweep. This time, I think it's going to be a little bit different. I feel that the Cubs are going to win both games at home. have a 3-1 lead going to Game 5 in L.A. Kershaw will be on the mound for Game 5, likely on short rest. The Dodgers win that game to stay alive. So if you've heard this before, they go home up 3-2, having a 3-1 lead. This time, they close it out in Game 6 of the National League Championship Series and at home and head on to the World Series. I know you've heard that story before, but this time they close it out unlike 13 years ago and they move on to the World Series. And what is that? I know that's like the narrative that we want to create that'll happen, but what is Billy Bean or Brad Pitt saying, Moneyball? And how can you not be romantic about baseball? And as a result, I am, and that's what I'm sticking with, Cubs in six.
I have Cubs in six also. I think it's going to be a tough series in certain ways. I think that it's going to be hard to win all, you know, certainly it's going to be hard to win three at Dodger Stadium. So I think that if the Cubs take care of business tonight in game one, even if they split the two at Wrigley Field, I think they can certainly take two out of three at Dodger Stadium. You come home up 3-2, you end the thing at Wrigley. And if they win the pennant at Wrigley Field, I hope that next Saturday, in the sometime like late Saturday night into Sunday morning, I am doused in champagne and highly inebriated celebrating. That's what I hope for.
Yep. I'm right there with you, man. I can't wait. Let's go bring it home here.
Let's do it. All right.
I can't wait. I hate that there's 7 hours till first pitch.
I know. It's just gonna be it's way too much time to wait. But
yeah, I'm gonna sit here and watch Illinois and Rutgers for a while. Like, come on.
I paint drying. That's what it is. You're Brian Beto. I'm Jordan Burnfield. Thank you for listening to the podcast. People can find our Facebook page by doing what?
Searching for the B Squared Show. I'll probably post it again on my personal account. You know, it's playoff time. Why not? You can do it there, and you can follow us on Twitter as well, right?
Yes. They can follow you on Twitter at Brian Beto. They can follow me on Twitter at Jordan Burnfield because we're both highly creative with our Twitter handles. And
gotta
so
be.
Please find us there because we will post it there. Find it on iTunes and find it on Podomatic as well. We hope to talk to you after the Cubs have won the pennant and are heading to the World Series. And if not, we will lament with you if they somehow come up short. So thank you so much for listening, as always, all season long. And here's to hoping that when we talk to you next, the Cubs are going to the World Series.